Matt Kibbe here, host of Kibbe on Liberty. We are at the New Hampshire Liberty Forum, hosted by my friends at the Free State Project. We're going to talk a little bit about politics. We're going to talk about social change. We're going to talk about policy and this beautiful community that is rising up in the Granite State, defending and fighting for liberty. Check it out. Carla, hey.
Hi, Matt.
So we've never actually had one of these conversations. We had a sort of community conversation at Pork Fest a couple years ago, but we are at the New Hampshire Liberty Forum, and you're kind of a muckety muck here. I can't ever tell exactly, but you're like OG Free State Project, right?
I am OG Free State Project. I am the president emeritus of the Free State Project. I triggered the move. I got us Edward Snowden. I tried to retire, but much like the mafia, once they get your, you know, their mitts in you,
once you get in,
you can't get out. Yeah, exactly. And now I chair the board. So OG, but, you know, really just trying to build and live my best life here in New Hampshire.
So when did the Free State Project start? Give us the ancient history.
Okay, so it started in 2001 based on an essay written by Jason Sorens, who at the time was a PhD at Yale. And he wrote this paper and he was basically just upset that libertarians get nowhere. And he posited, you know, as this young graduate student, hey, what would happen if we all moved to one geographic area? So people really liked that idea. We sometimes forget how much technology has changed even in like 25 years, yeah. Right? So this was back in 2001. And to me, it feels like the Free State Project is actually a product of tech. And my background's tech, so maybe I'm coloring that a little bit. But, you know, put the essay out. There was this massive response. It was about a week before 9/11. And if you actually go back and look at the Google trends, like it was off the charts. Like people were like, what is this concept? What is this notion? And then 9/11 happened. And then since then, it's just been sort of like a flat line that tries to kind of get back up. So in 2003, they took a vote to decide like, oh, who is going to have the honor of hosting all these future libertarians? And we picked New Hampshire. That was in 2003. It was actually a few months before I personally signed the pledge. So I didn't pick New Hampshire. And people have asked over the years, would you have picked it? And I think if I know now what I know, yes. But maybe back then, I think I might have been a Wyoming girl, to be honest, like the plains, the mountains, cowboys.
You know? I mean, there's, having been to Wyoming and Montana, I would lump into this, there's the same liberty vibe there.
Yes, yes. And so, and that was why we were looking at those kinds of states. You know, it was a low population, fairly low taxes. New Hampshire doesn't have a sales tax. We don't have a personal income tax. And actually, thanks to Free Staters, we now, in 2025, I believe, so next year, we won't have an interest and dividends tax. So it's really becoming truly like a good place to come and protect wealth. So we looked at other states, low population, low taxes. So all the usual suspects, the Dakotas, Wyoming, you know, all of that. But New Hampshire won out, and it pretty much won out because there were locals who campaigned to make New Hampshire win. So they actually threw, no one knows this, but locals threw the first Pork Fest. And it was like Pork Fest Zero. And it was like, hey, come here and come hang. And I forget if, I don't think I was at the first one, but I think I came to the second one. And everyone at that one was super into 9/11 conspiracy theories. It was like way back then. Yeah. And I was just like, oh, these are interesting people. At least people are asking questions.
The analogy I always use when I'm trying to explain to people what the vibe is at Porkfest, and it's obviously much more developed community, more sophisticated, much bigger than it so surely was back then. But it always reminded me of the parking lot in a Grateful Dead concert.
Yeah, I love that.
Because you have the same things. There's a sense of belonging. There's a sense of family because you literally have this caravan of people that would travel from city to city. The parking lot itself is a sort of a spontaneously emerging marketplace.
Nice.
And you know, quite typically, the cops are hostile. They're trying to bust people.
they're trying to harass people, but the deadheads would always take care of each other.
Mm.
And there was a set of rules. Don't hurt people. Don't take their stuff. But, you know, protect your neighbor.
Right.
And look out for each other. And none of that was written down. It wasn't legislated. It was just the way they were. And if anything, formal law enforcement was a detriment to that sense of community.
Yeah, no doubt.
So when I go to Pork Fest, when I went the first time, I'm like, I'm home because this, I love this vibe. Like,
do you remember when you came the first time?
I think it's about 15 years ago.
Okay, yeah, because I feel like I remember you guys coming and then like not for a while and then, you know, and it's always interesting to be like, how did someone hear? What drew them, you know?
I mean, at the time I was the head of FreedomWorks. And it was, in some ways, it was fun because virtually no one had any idea who I was, even though I was super involved in politics and all that TV I was doing. But I wasn't well known in libertarian circles. I was almost like a closeted libertarian. I was able to come out.
Did you come out at Pork Fest?
Yes. My name's Matt. I'm a libertarian.
Right. But I mean, it is almost as bad. It does feel that way sometimes. Yeah.
But it's also like, and this is true with anything, and I guess Tulsi Gabbard was talking about this morning, that it's really cool to discover that you're not alone.
Yes.
And even libertarians need community. I happen to think that free people make for better communities.
Yes.
But, you know, libertarians lean into that, I can go my own way kind of mentality, but there's something empowering about discovering that there's lots of us.
See,
and we could coalesce and we could do things.
And I actually think that, to go back to that tech idea, I think that's what happened, you know, back in maybe like 2010, maybe even 2008 with the Ron Paul stuff was kind of when social media was spinning up and the networks were getting bigger. And I remember those times online and it was frothy. You saw everyone's feeds. So you actually had like thousands of libertarians who were all boosting the signal, right? And then memes started and we were like, oh, now we have a way to play, right? Like it's, you know, a short little thing that can get such a quick idea across. I mean, you know, the war will be won by memes, I believe, right? The information war, at least. And so I think the government got a fright when they realized, oh, for years they had talked about, you know, the statism is the culture. And if you're not part of the culture, you're a subculture. And I was like, who defines who's the culture and who's the subculture, right? And I think what happened on the internet is all the subcultures suddenly were like, oh, but we as a subculture, whether we're a biker or a brewer or a BDSM or like whatever the subculture was, they were all freedom oriented. And suddenly all these people, like it was bubbling up where it was like, oh, but all these groups coalesce around liberty. And I think statists went, oh crap, we really are in the minority and most of these people don't believe the bullshit we tell them.
Yeah, this is the problem. Like they're like, oh shit, we have a problem. And this is why I remain wildly optimistic, even though like we could go down the litany of insanely bad things that the government is up to today, including censorship online and trying to literally pull the plug on that power that we have to self-organize, to self-identify, to figure out what we believe. All these liberating technologies that politically drove not just the Ron Paul movement. I mean, I always go back to Howard Dean.
Yeah, sure.
If you remember Howard Dean.
I believe he squealed at an airport here somewhere, didn't he?
So Howard Dean starts, and you know, I guess back then at least, he was kind of a Bernie bro and coming from Vermont, and the DNC establishment didn't like that. Who's this guy? Why is he upsetting our apple cart? You know, fast forward to the Tea Party, I guess the Ron Paul movement would precede the Tea Party movement.
And Tea Party and Occupy, like we shouldn't
Occupy
forget,
Wall Street.
Right? And those two things are really important because that was the left and the right both fighting the correct enemy, the banksters, the cronyists, the war makers, right? Like it was actually directed, the anger was directed where it needed to be. And the magic trick they've managed to do over the last decade because of censorship and because of, you know, the social media channels being so highly controlled, is they've managed to get everyone fighting each other, right? The polarization is not an accident. It's 100% manufactured. And so if we're fighting each other, we're not fighting them. And that last moment was when it was Occupy and Tea Party. And we actually had a lot of strength there. And yeah. I think we've squandered it.
Yeah.
Free the People is embarking on our most ambitious project to date to document and expose the lies behind the greatest public health failure in my lifetime. We're talking to insiders with firsthand knowledge of the government's role in funding, creating, and then covering up the COVID-19 virus in our exclusive new documentary series, The Cover-Up. But I need your help. We won't get to the bottom of this scandal alone, so I'm asking viewers to crowdsource any information that could be helpful to our investigation. If you're watching this, you already know what the government did during lockdowns was unforgivable. Help us get to the truth and prevent it from ever happening again. To get involved, go to freethepeople.org/coverup. That's freethepeople.org/coverup. The truth is out there.
Yeah, the before the professionals came in, and I would say this as a Tea Party organizer, the political professionals also hijacked the Tea Party, but I think they hijacked Occupy first.
Yeah, probably.
and you can go back, and I write about this in one of my books. I don't even remember which one, but you can go back, and I'm like agreeing with these activists in New York City about how they're getting screwed, and they don't know it's the Fed. They don't know that the transfer of wealth from us to Wall Street, but they know viscerally something is fundamentally wrong.
Wrong, yeah.
But then it just became a partisan thing for all of us. But I think that the one thing that perhaps our would-be overlords didn't notice so much, and maybe they're starting to notice, is what you guys were doing in terms of community organizing. Because it wasn't political at all. It's not about politics. Even back then, it wasn't about policy. It's like, let's come together and build a community.
Right. Right. And I think that's really important. And I think that's how we'll win, actually, right? Because there are historic movements like this, right? Even, you know, my background, you know, my forefathers left Europe, they got on a boat, they went to South Africa, you know, we were Boers, we fought the British, you know, we lost our farm, like, you know, the whole story.
You are an African American.
I am an African American, me and Elon. You know, so that was sort of moving for history, or moving for freedom back in a religious sense back then, you know, whenever that was, the 16, 1700s. But even something like, you know, Israel originally was like, oh, people could move to this one place. Now it's gotten corrupted. But I think the idea of creating a geographic area where people can come together, we're saying community, right? Because not even all libertarians really agree on
what
to do, like what the solutions are.
Do any two libertarians totally agree on anything?
I mean, I think we agree to disagree, and I think we could do a better job on that. But, you know, building this sense of community where, of course, because we're bringing people together, everyone gets to naturally gravitate. I think if we're doing it right and we're leading with liberty to go do what they love. So it has a political element now, right? The wonks are getting elected and they're doing their stuff. There's a sort of community, just agorism, people making, you know, have farms and make soap. And, you know, I was actually thinking this morning, I was like, you know, I should just have Rainito or one of these filmmakers come through the house and I'd be like, my soap's made by a free stater and it's natural, you know, my shampoo, my this, my meat, this, you know, like everything in my house is really from the community at this stage. And I think that's important too, because people get to move here and actually come do things they care about and are passionate about. And, you know, we believe in self-ownership and we believe in, hopefully, you know, self-empowerment and improvement and all of those things. And so it almost creates this canvas for people to come and be like, how can I become my best self? sometimes we get people who are escaping something and they end up here, you know? So I like to always say, come build the community, but, you know, bring some savings, you know, have a plan, figure it out, and then come make your path.
So I definitely saw this at Porkfest during lockdowns. People that hadn't ever heard the L word before, libertarian, people that hadn't been paying much attention to politics or trying to ignore it and live their own damn lives. There was an explosion of interest in Porkfest, and I assume, in part because you were one of the few places on the planet,
yes,
where you could gather freely and not have someone yell at you for killing their grandmother.
Oh my God. But
I would assume there's been a follow-on increase in people saying, you know what, I love this community, I'm going to move here.
I mean, we definitely have momentum. I think that some of the shifts that have happened just in this time. So yes, I think part of that started with COVID. People realizing, of course, that it does matter where you live, you know, and if you're going to be in, I moved from New York City, and I'm really grateful I was not there when it happened, because I actually saw some of my friends in New York actually kind of lose their minds. And, you know, one friend didn't leave her apartment for 6 months. She would cross the street if someone didn't have a mask on. And these are like, you know, close friends, you know, yeah. She's a lefty, but I've taken her shooting, you know, like we're good friends. And so, yes, having this community here and then having the because of the community, you have people who have your back. So it's maybe a little easier to be like, I'm doing my festival, you know, and we just literally said First and Second Amendment protected assembly. I'm throwing my annual party. I've been doing Porkfest for a long time. And I was just like, we're going to do it. It wasn't the biggest one we've ever done. We had maybe 1,000, 1,200 people. We had a lot of kids, and that made a huge difference. Like, kids were running up to me, you know, and they're like, Queen Quill, are you the queen lady? You know, and they were like, we haven't left our house in months. Like, thank you. Like, they were like kids with tears in their eyes going, thank you for doing this, right? Just random. So we got a lot of momentum from that. And we've been trying to leverage it. I think also in New Hampshire, which is first in the nation, right? So they do this primary here. I'm not sure primaries, the whole electoral stuff, not sure that really has quite the flavor or sway that it used to. Certainly the press this time for the primary was
dipped. Are you saying that the two parties rigged their elections?
Maybe. Just
what?
Just a little, yeah. But, you know, last year at Porkfest, we had RFK, so Bobby came out. You know, Tulsi was supposed to be there. We had Larry Elders. You know, we had a lot of real presidential candidates. Vivek came, you know, he spent a lot of time there. And that is actually testament to the fact that the movement itself is serious enough or considered serious enough
it's becoming a voting bloc.
Yes.
And coveted.
Yes. So, you know, they call them kingmakers, right? But I'll just be a queen maker.
At Kibbe on Liberty, freedom is a lifestyle 24/7, something you live and breathe and wear every day. If that describes you, you need the very best Liberty swag in the market today. Just like this shirt I happen to be wearing. Go to freethepeople.org/KOL and check out our exciting merch. You too can love liberty and look cool.
No, it was cool, and I guess I've said this on the show, but RFK's speech, I mean, clearly he knew his audience, but it's one of the more libertarian speeches I've ever heard of from a candidate who's viable. Like, there is a scenario where RFK can win. Now I've heard perfectly libertarian speeches from candidates who will never ever be viable as a presidential candidate. Vivek also he came out and clearly endorsed commuting the sentence of Ross Ulbricht.
Yep.
First serious candidate to do that, and I think that has true implications. So yeah, it was cool to have them care what libertarians thought about things.
Right. And I think that some people, they're chasing clout, right? So social media, some of the politicians don't know how to play that. So Some of that was interesting, but you know what happened locally? I don't know, even know if you know this story, but when Bobby said he was going to come, so there was lots of drama, right? So I'll just sketch the scenario, right? So he demanded a gun-free zone, right? So of course, like, we're big 2A people, and people were really butthurt. They were not happy about that.
And it should be obvious, but it should be said that everybody's packing at Porkfest.
Everyone is packing at Porkfest, which, and to some degree, is, I think, why they leave us alone, right? Like, I go meet with the police chief. I haven't in a couple of years, but I did in the COVID year, for example. And, you know, and the arrangement is pretty much like, if we stay on the grounds, they'll leave us alone, you know, and don't drive out of there like that.
Because, by the way, the safest place on the planet.
So I know this sounds so hubristic, but I was thinking the other day, I'm like, oh, because it was in that NBC clip, I guess my sentence was, it's like Christian camp with harder drugs, right? And I was like, oh, I hope my parents don't see that kind of thing, right? But then I thought about it, but it's like Christian camp with harder drugs with a lot of guns, right? So it's probably by statist's definition of what is dangerous, literally the most dangerous place on earth. Right? What? You have kids running around while people are doing hard drugs and people have guns and there's fire and no one's ever been killed. Burning Man cannot say that. We have never had a really serious injury other than some numbnut who did a backflip into the bonfire one night. He got burnt pretty bad. No one knew who he was, which is always interesting when you're sort of community-based and trying to grow. But he made it on a helicopter to Boston's hospital without ever giving his name. And I was like, that's sort of uniquely New Hampshire in some weird way too. Like, he got airlifted to a hospital from Porkfest, and everyone's like, who was that dude? What happened there? So Porkfest is this very sort of unique thing. So Bobby's there, he wants his gun-free zone. Dennis Pratt, who was organizing at the time, calls me. I was in my community garden fighting my mayor, different story. But he calls and he's like, hey, he wants to do this. What do you think? And I was like, do it. Let's see what happens, right? Why not? Why not's very much my vibe. And people are very upset. So they decided to do a build your own AR class out on the field while we were having RFK speak on the inside. And then we had the security. But then people were attacking me so much online about it, right? And everyone's like, what else is she going to agree to? Who else is going to get the next gun-free zone? And it's a joke, but it's also true. And I was like, look, my criteria were the following. Someone who has worldwide name recognition, right? So, I mean, we forget, like a Kennedy, that's a real thing, right? Like, that's neural programming, that's years of history, that's hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people who know the story, all of that, right? So I said, okay, if someone has worldwide name recognition, so I would say that's Kennedy, Trump, Elon Musk, and maybe Paris Hilton. And that's mostly because... there's a video. And then I was like, okay, so those four people, I might give, you know, that's worldwide name recognition. And then two of your family members need to have been assassinated. Like, it's not an unreasonable request he made.
I feel like a Kennedy gets a break on this one.
Yeah, right? So I think in some ways that was just such a beautiful metaphor for our community, right? People were protesting. We allowed it to happen. People sort of figured it out. But
and by the way, all still voluntary association. Yes. Like, you don't have to go.
Right, exactly. And it was, you know, so that was interesting because there was like a side discussion about property rights. But preceding this, Ray Buckley, who is the head of the New Hampshire Democratic Party, issued a press release and put out a whole Twitter storm about Bobby coming to Porkfest, right? And Kennedy ended up just blasting them and being like, I will talk to anyone who is willing to talk to me, and I'm going to go to this and I'm going to have this conversation, as he should, right? And so there were at least four mainstream media outlets there, including the New York Times. There was not one story this year in the mainstream news from Porkfest. It was a full news embargo. The only story that came out was from a Swiss newspaper, NKK, out of Switzerland. And I was like, that was very telling to me. You know, they show their hands in stupid ways, too, where you're like, you should have just put the story out. It's news.
Right.
But to not put the story out when I know you're there and you're reporting on it.
They're so obvious now.
Yeah, they're dumb.
It's the same thing with our government censors, like the ham-fisted way that they now try to gag the stories that people want to hear and the stories that people will hear regardless of what the old stream media wants to do. But it was that day was interesting, and I realized that you know, RFK has all sorts of positions that are anathema to libertarians, but he was speaking to us, and he really wanted us to be interested.
Yeah,
and that's a new thing.
And, you know, I mean, I follow him on Insta, and sure, I mean, first of all, he's a politician. Everyone's a politician. So when everyone goes, well, he's not great on this, I'm like, no one is great on everything, because they're politicians and they are beholden to someone. And we forget how big that machine is too. I took a meeting with Vivek before, I think it was his first meeting in New Hampshire. And I asked him candidly, I was like, tell me about your fundraising. Like, you know, where's your money coming from? Who owns you, right? That's how I like to ask it. And he was like, well, I'm going to be mostly self-funded, but, you know, I need to get to that 40,000 threshold for the polls and whatever. But, you know, I'm going to push a $5 small donation, whatever. And I was like, all right, tell me in this side of the ledger, how much money are you willing to spend? He didn't actually give me a number. So he's a good politician. But whatever that number is, I said to him, now, Vivek, on the other side of the ledger, how much money do you think the vested interests have in trying to stop anyone who can actually change something, right? And it's, I mean, it's unfathomable. It's trillions and trillions. I mean, actually, we could just throw the unfunded liabilities, the national debt as a starting point, right? And so when you think about it that way, that's one of the reasons the Free State Project is such a good proposition, because I don't think they can change DC. I don't think we can reform it. I don't even think if Bobby gets it, like no one who's a perfect candidate, none of them can get anything done. No one likes saying this, but Trump got nothing done. I mean, he didn't make another war, but he did print $6 trillion, you know?
And he empowered the lockdowners.
I have to keep
reminding people that Fauci worked for him. It wasn't vice versa.
Yes. And you know, and maybe there it's sort of like he naively thought maybe that people in the most senior positions in government somehow got there because they're good. I don't subscribe to that belief. I don't, for example, say all cops are bad, but I'm pretty sure if you're a police chief, you are. Because you've been in a system for 20 years.
Incentives and
you've been perpetuating.
And the things you have to do to get into that position of power weed out good people.
Yes. And it's unfortunate. And honestly, in some ways, I've run for office a few times. I probably would have won if they didn't gerrymander my Senate district out. And I was sort of reflecting, you know, I'm a go-getter. And I was kind of like, why do I keep losing? You know, like I was like, oh, I don't want to be a loser. And I had this moment and I was like, oh, you're actually, it's because you don't want it. Because I don't really, I'd be good at it. I get it. I mean, I'll be great. You know, I'll be one term president of a free New Hampshire, sure. But I was just like, I don't want, like, I can't, I go up to the state house and I'm just like, I want to stab someone by like lunchtime in a nonviolent way.
Thank you for joining me today on Kibbe on Liberty and for being part of our fiercely independent audience. Every week, my organization, Free the People, partners with Blaze TV to bring you this show. My guests bring smart perspectives on everything from current events to timeless philosophical debates. If you like what you hear, go to freethepeople.org/KOL and support Kibbe on Liberty so we can continue to produce these honest conversations with interesting people. Now, let's get back to it.
So go in this direction. You know, we can't fix Washington, D.C. As a refugee of trying to. I can identify with what you're suggesting. Although I have to say, in our defense, the one bright side of Washington, D.C. is that you have guys like Thomas Massie and sure. Rand Paul, who are unusual. Like, you know, back in the day we had Ron Paul, but Ron Paul wasn't a player in politics.
Right.
Like people, he did his own thing. He stayed principled, but nobody in D.C. really cared.
Right.
They're very anxious about what Massie and Rand Paul and Mike Lee and Amash when he was there, that having somebody speaking truth to power and lobbying legislative bombs on the Senate floor, that's a good thing.
Yeah, no, it is. And again, back to that tech idea, they have more leverage and the message can come out more because in the information warfare scope, they've lost control of that. When was it? When Clinton, maybe 2012-ish, maybe 11, when she said we lost the information warfare. And they did for a while. We were definitely winning. And I think that's why this overreach with the censorship is so brazen. I mean, I'm a nobody. I mean, I think if you put all my platform, I mean, I built out the Free State Projects platform, so I'll take the 100,000 followers there. It could have been mine, right? But I was like doing it for the org. If you put my followers together over all my platforms, I have maybe 20,000 followers. Like, I'm not a big deal. But the amount I was censored is, I mean, it was jaw-dropping to me. It was like, I was literally amazed. Like, yeah. I'd be like, wow, really? And one of the fact checks I got, they actually ended up taking it down. And it's very interesting when you go back through your memories on social media, anything I posted basically during COVID the first year, most of it was science-based because I was like, look, science or legally based, right? Like informed consent. I was looking at patent filings in different countries to see what was redacted where so maybe we could back into stuff. Like I was doing good work. I go back now, none of those posts, this post is not available, or this supporting data, like real studies and stuff, it's just memory hold. It is all gone.
Erased from history.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I keep it all on my blog, so like I didn't lose it, because I was like, you can't just trust these channels anymore. But even that makes me sad. You know, like I am a child of the internet and watched it happen. I mean, you know, my background, Silicon Valley tech, Apple, you know, like I did it all. And I remember when I understood what the internet was and I was like, all knowledge at my fingertips, I cried. I actually really cried. Like it was like, wow, right? And now I'm like, geez, did we it up, you know, like, I can't believe it. I'm like,
yeah. So I want to get back to the Free State, but this is my favorite subject. There was a time when one of my intellectual spirit animals is a guy named John Perry Barlow, one of the lyricists for the Grateful Dead, but sort of a libertarian tech utopian type thinker. And he talked about the right to know.
Mm-hmm.
And this is back and when the internet was free and wild. And you could not have to get to Harvard anymore. You wouldn't have to get to Yale. You could build your own curriculum and you could learn anything from anybody subject to the limits of your ability to do so.
Right.
So that is radically revolutionary. It's radically libertarian.
Mm-hmm.
It gets rid of classes and who your parents are and how much money you have. Which is precisely why they're trying to kill it.
Yes.
because that in that world where merit and hard work and free thinking are rewarded, this is a libertarian playing field.
Mm-hmm.
We can finally play on an even field and beat them. And so I look at the really ham-fisted ways that they're trying to censor our speech and thinking they're really desperate. They're getting sloppy. This is good. Let's double down.
Well, they are, but also, unfortunately, I think the power of censorship is it does kick us back to, you know, that stage before it. And in some ways, it's even worse because actual real truth or, you know, real science, I don't even know what that is anymore, but it's, you know, it's being not being made available. And then, of course, people start to take really bad decisions based on bad things. And then that balloons out. And I'm fairly confident there are US departments that are operating on false information from a different department. So, like, literally, people are doing things now just based on no real knowledge, just on idiotocracy, literally.
Soviet echo chamber.
Oh my God. It's like, how did we get here?
Chernobyl. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Right. Just keep moving forward.
Yeah. But yeah. So with the censorship, I think we, you know, in South Africa during the apartheid era, some of the censorship I, you know, saw with my own eyes was blacking out of words in newspapers. And those were like almost silly because they were for things like the Casper, which is the equivalent of an American Bearcat, right? So like a tent they could drive around. And because the South African regime was involved in these border wars that no one knew about, and they had national conscription, so there was the draft. And so, you know, it was that whole story of everyone in my age group, like the guys were going to college and studying for like 9 years because they were all trying to not, you know, if you were in school, you didn't have to go to the wars and stuff. But you'd open the paper and there'd just be like blacked out words, you know, and at least that sort of gave you a sense of, hey, there's something amiss. But I think with the memory holding on the internet, like we, you know, it's very unnoticeable to the people we would most be able to influence. So it is very dangerous. And I think this TikTok thing is just, I mean, I'd be pretty sure I'm on, I mean, at least all the bots on the internet think I'm Putin's puppet. So, you know, I'm pretty sure like most Free Staters would be under the TikTok bill they're looking at now. They could define us all in a way that would say, no, you don't even get a social media account anymore.
Yeah.
But the counter to that is community. So, you know what? We can just all hang out and we don't care. We could just yell at each other in a room.
Well, this, like, I think there's a robustness to your model. Like, it's not a political campaign where win or lose, everybody just goes home back to what they were doing. It's not even like a ballot initiative or some policy. Maybe it's homeschooling. You're really fighting on that. It's belonging to something that you want to belong
right.
to. So it's sustainable. I suspect that's why there's a list of all you guys. I think your enemies, the authoritarians, left and right, are worried that they don't know how to disrupt a community. They don't know how to break it apart. They don't know how to stop it. Because to do so is blatantly, obviously, transparently un-American.
Right. But, well, they've gotten clever. I mean, I think the way that they do it is they, you know, libertarianism doesn't always have the best brand image, right? And I experienced, I'm going to go about this in a Carla way, so just bear with me. So I was in Costa Rica with a very good friend of mine. I think he was actually the person I first heard the term libertarian from back in maybe like 99-ish. And he and his wife and their kids are sort of global people. They travel a lot. And we were on the beach for Thanksgiving. And he had watched some interview and he was kind of like, Carla, you should be saying this. You should be saying this, right? Because they'll take the craziest soundbite and that's it, right? And I was like, dude, I say all of those things. They just don't make it to the final cut, right? And then I said to him, well, you know, when you talk to people about libertarianism, like, what do you lead with? And he goes, oh, I don't talk to people about libertarian. I don't tell anyone I'm a libertarian anymore. And I was like, do you see the problem? You keep telling me the brand's bad, but no one who could fix the brand or improve the brand or better explain what we believe or more persuasively or less smellily or whatever it is, explain it, don't want to do it because the enemies of liberty, of course, will attack the brand and then sort of attach it to all of us. So here in New Hampshire, they've successfully been doing that where a lot of people will... They don't denounce that they're a Free Stater. But even, you know, Jason Sorens, who's the founder who lives here, who ran for something in Amherst, you know, was trying to do this sort of arm's length thing because you get tarred and feathered for everyone's misdeeds. Whereas I'm like, this is the opportunity to talk about individualism. Yes, we're a community of free staters, but what does free stater mean? I'm like, it literally means something different to all of us because we're individuals. And then it's just, let's find what unites us and where we can work together. And that turns out to be an anarchist utopia. And even if everyone got exactly what they believed in, you would still have to talk to your neighbor, talk to your friends, persuade that person. So why aren't we just navigating through the world with that energy? And I think we're learning to do that, and many people are starting to do that. But the lady who made the list came to Liberty Forum. Hats off to her, I think, right? I mean, that's coming into the belly of the beast. She's
like a progressive troll, democratic apparatchik. What's her deal?
I mean, this is New Hampshire. So let's start with, she was a senator in New Hampshire. So like she got elected a few times, right? I don't know where the dysfunction of the hate comes from, but yeah, she's a very progressive person who put together this list. It sort of maligned people, a lot of people who aren't free staters per se, maybe they were pre-staters or they're just liberty aligned are on the list. They were kind of like, why are we on the list? Some people were like, why am I not on the list, right? So we just thought we'd make fun with it. And so we have little buttons where it's, you know, you're on the list or you're a Liberty Ninja, you're not on the list. And maybe, you know, I ran into her. I invited her to lunch. I also told her I would sue her. So a little mixed.
So does she get the irony? I'm assuming she thinks she's anti-fascist, but she's making lists.
So I tried to, in all seriousness, ask her that this morning, where I said to her, but I'm going to start making a list. And she was like, yeah, do that. I was like, I'm only going to make a list of people who make lists. And she just didn't get it. But that was my point. Only fascists make lists of people they don't like.
There might be bad guys that have made lists and then checked them off. But feel free to add me to the list.
Okay.
I've been added to worse lists than that, I suspect. But tell us where people can find you and the Free State Project and how they can get involved. They're watching from across the country as we speak, and they're like, this sounds interesting. I hadn't heard about it.
Cool. So Free State Project, FSP.org. That'll take you to the main website. I highly recommend people sign up for the newsletter. It is a good way to start to sort of see what we're about. The most success we have with people who move here are people who come and visit and meet the community. So I highly recommend come to our events, Porkfest, of course, Liberty Forum, where we're at now. We usually have a few like crypto-y things in the fall. So there'll be the Free State digital asset crypto FSBDAC festival that's a lot of letters.
That's too much for me.
Yes. So that's the Fenton's.
Just call it crypto thing.
There's a crypto thing in the fall. And, you know, we just recommend also that people will just let us know you're coming. And then we sometimes throw a party. People can go to fsp.org/calendar. That's a really good way to just see what is going on in the state. And, you know, we have the longest crypto meetup in the world has been running here for almost 20 years, a weekly crypto meetup. You know, we have all these amazing things. There's a whole food freedom, you know, group of people who are working on that stuff. So people look at the calendar, take a look, let us know if you're coming, sign up for the newsletter, come to our events, and just reach out. And then, of course, follow all the social media accounts, so Free State Project on Twitter or on X. We have Insta, we have like wherever people are, maybe not me, I'm pretty sure I'm in charge of that account and nothing's happening there. But yeah, follow our social, reach out, come hang out, come meet the crowd, the people. And I find it's hard to say no once everyone's met everyone here.
I know from personal experience, it's hard to say no to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Matt.
This is cool.
Great.
Thanks for watching. If you liked the conversation, make sure to like the video, subscribe, and also ring the bell for notifications. And if you want to know more about Free the People, go to freethepeople.org.